talk this morning is what can you do with an art history degree, and we'll find out, I guess. So this is Debbie Hyatt over here, who's a MBA, worked for Pierce County in the Office of the Executive, and she's a special project coordinator for habitat protection and restoration. And she's used her undergraduate art history degree, which she got here at the University of Washington, and her MBA, Office of Business Administration from the University of Puget Sound, to go down an unusual career path. Over the last 34 years, she's worked as the business manager of a local ski area, helped in the formation of educational software startup, and worked in management for Pierce County. And she's held various positions with Pierce County, and director of planning and land services during the implementation of the Growth Management Act, played a lead in identifying a location, gaining neighborhood support, and securing the permits for the county's detention facility in Tacoma, and has for the past 10 years worked on special projects that have habitat protection or restoration related elements. So, last little piece that she added here says, while using the mantra, don't do a project for only one reason, Debbie will provide examples of projects that have been undertaken in Pierce County, using a process that identifies problems and then finding atypical partners to work together on projects that would have been a challenge for one agency. So we'll hear today then what you can do with an art history degree.
Thank you very much. And the magic is? I want to first of all thank you all for not electing this to be one of your two absences. I appreciate that. You get extra bonus for that. In addition to giving you a taste of what practitioners actually do, there are a couple of things I'd like to convey as a mother. One is you don't have to know exactly what you're going to do with your degree. Degrees are important. Don't fret it. I think I'm a good example of that. You personally don't have to know everything. I definitely am not the smartest cookie in the whole room. You don't have to do that. And I hate to tell you this, but group projects really are a good thing. You may hate them now, but you will find out they are really important. And I think one of the best skills that you can learn is how to listen. And then the practical aspect is that don't do things for one purpose. Conserve energy, be lazy. Try to do multiple things with multiple purposes. Things are complex. There isn't just black and white. So how am I going to do that? I'm going to rely on using one of our river systems, the Puyallup River, to show the complexity of some of the water issues and the challenge of balancing things. People talk about sustainability and sustainability being a balance of economics, environment, and the social aspects. That's kind of a theme that we try to do when we're doing all of our projects. I personally love working for Pierce County. I have left my business cards out there. Like every other government, we are in a fiscally constrained things, but if you have any questions, maybe I can get you to the right departments if it's something you'd like to do. Pierce County has a really, really supportive leadership. We are a charter county in that that means that we have a county council and elected executive, and I work for the executive branch. The culture has been one of cooperation, trying to work together, not from department to department, across departments, across agencies, across business and government. And I think one of the things that I've always resented, but I've come to realize what a benefit is Pierce County's always been fiscally constrained. We don't have a large utility like King County has Metro, and utilities can charge extra fees, cities can charge business taxes. Those things are not available to counties, so we've always been fiscally constrained. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why we've had this culture of having to work together. So where the heck is Pierce County? We are right here. You guys, Seattle's right in here, and King. I think of Pierce as looking as like the mouth of a bass, and Kitsap is probably the tail. Tacoma is our county seat, and Pierce has the forts in it over here. We have Fort Lewis, we have McCord. We have some exquisite intact prairie habitat, if any of you are into that. We have marine and fresh water, and For those of you who are skiers, Crystal Mountain is right here. It's in Pierce County, and this lovely white dot is Mount Rainier. That's also Pierce County. One of the challenges that we have are all the different interests in the county. All these little white things that you can't read, but you can see. Those are 21 of the 23 cities or towns that we have in Pierce County. Each city and town has its own ability to have its own regulations, programs, etc. And so the challenge often is, when you're looking at things regionally, how do you get everyone to work together? Along this side of Pierce County, our border is the Nisqually River. It starts in a national park, ends in a national refuge. Again, if any of you are into estuarine issues, beautiful, beautiful estuarine wetlands and stuff down here. And the other nice part is almost 70% of that river shoreline is in some sort of a protective status as a result of government agencies, nonprofits, and even the fort. And the Nisqually tribe is significantly involved with that. But I'm going to talk about the Puyallup, which comes down here. And it has a little piece of the White River, which I will tell you an interesting story about. At least I think it's interesting. The White River, which I had mentioned, used to come into King County. It used to hit up with the Green River. But if you can think in your mind of all that beautiful farmland that is now covered by industry in the Kent and Auburn Valley, the White River would frequently flood and wipe out their farms. As you can see, this is an actual picture. I think it's from 1918. But the King County farmers and the Pierce County farmers literally used to stand guard using shotguns. They would blow up, using dynamite, the river course and try to switch it back and forth so it would stay out of their way. Well, in 1897, the King County farmers, one could say they used the right amount, others would say they used too much dynamite, and they actually blew a cliff off that came down, and as a result, subsequently, the White River's always belonged in Pierce County after that. It's now hooked up to the Stuck River. There was the problem, and it was taken to court, and the courts decided that King County would have to pay Pierce County, you know, to maintain it, but it would always be that way. But one of the underlying issues was what to do with these rivers. And of course, as you know, we all think we have the best ideas on how to deal with things. And so one of the things that was decided was that we'd start levying these rivers. So in 1914, you can see the existing river, how it was. You can see remnants of the way it had been before. And then you can see the drawings of where they thought it would be great to build levees and shoot that water right on out to Commencement Bay. So this is what we did in a significant portion of the Puyallup River. The other thing that took place was because the Puyallup River is glacially fed, there's a whole bunch of sediment. And so the actual bottom of the river itself, which now is a result of a treaty that's just now 20 years old, the Puyallup tribe owns the lower portion of the river, the lower end of the river, the bottom of the river. It used to be that they would come in and they would scalp the gravel. And because that hasn't happened, at least since 1996 with the listing of the salmon, the river bottom itself is actually filling up. And so you're losing capacity on those levees that go along the side. They also thought it would be great. These are some of the original concrete side slopes. They still exist, and through testing, it's shown that they're still in pretty darn good shape. And they're still the basis of a lot of the levees in the system. They also used just plain old brush matting. Now, this would be where there wouldn't necessarily have been a construction of a concrete levee, but if there was an area or a community that wanted some protection, they could use this method. And then these were interesting. These barrier drifts, if you could see underneath this, there would be poles stuck every X feet, like 30 feet across or out into the river. They would string cables, you can see a little bit of it here, and then let the debris build up. And this is how an individual farmer would protect their land. And what it would do, obviously, is it would change the hydrology and the hydraulics of the river potentially aim it towards its neighbor, but it would keep them out of their area. So for years, it gave us a sense of well-being. And as a result, if for those of you who are familiar with this area, the Tacoma Dome would be down here. You've got your corner of the I-5 freeway and 5 with that ungodly, awful video billboards right here. So this is the area, and you can see the farms. We still have a significant amount of farms, which are a priority for Pierce County. We have a phenomenal amount of industry. This is our port. We have commerce, and then a phenomenal transportation system, you know, the interstate, I-5 that goes through. And it looks pretty darn good. This is what the levees and the systems do when you're just driving down and looking at what's happening. But all it takes is a little bit of a rainfall above normal, either influenced by additional development, so additional flows, as you can see what's happened here. Climate change is going to have a significant impact in us, not in the amount of water, but the timing of the water. Before, when we used to have snows that would fall in the mountains and then stay there and slowly melt and come down, you could deal with them. But now we get these changes in peak flows. This, for any of you who've gone to the Puyallup Fair, this is probably the main road that you took. You know, the Puyallup Fair would be down here in this corner. And then this is the road on the north side of it with I-5 up here. And local governments operate under a program that FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Association, puts out. They are the ones who provide flood insurance. No private industry buys or sells flood insurance. It's only through the federal government. And what the federal government does is they provide you minimum standards by which you need to regulate and operate your systems. And this is the map of the 100-year flood. And 100-year doesn't mean it happens every 100 years. It means it has one chance in 100 of happening every year. And if you know, we've had multiple 100-year events in the last 10 years. So Pierce County, Fife, the whole group, we were regulating with these green areas being what's called the floodplain. The floodplain, in my layman's terms, it's where I think about the area where I don't want to walk through it with my dress shoes on. You know, it's kind of also the definition of for an attorney and where the edge of a wetland is. It's kind of where you stop. But there's also a floodway, and the floodway is the deep and fast-flowing areas. Floodplains you can construct, according to FEMA, in those areas, but you have to elevate or floodproof or do things like that. Floodway, there is no construction. So as you can see, the area was building out using this sort of a map. But within the last 5 to 10 years, the federal government told FEMA they needed to go through and update all their maps across the whole United States. And because of this population size of our Northwest region, we were one of the first they did. So they needed to digitize maps. And using the same formula, but updated information, here's the result of what we have now, that currently this our region is living under. King County has some of the same issues. But all this blue stuff is now floodplain. And because floodplain allows construction but reduces it, it has the potential of, you know, totally impacting our port. It has the potential of telling the federal government or the state government they can't do any new interchanges, they couldn't add the carpool lane, they couldn't do any of those things. So this was an opportunity for the whole region, not just the governments, but the businesses and stuff, to get together and say, what in the world are we going to do? How can we deal with what's equivalent to about a base flow of the Puyallup River, 22,000 cubic feet of water per second, and get it to the bay so that we don't have to live with this and all the ramifications of it? I wanted to show you this for a couple reasons. One, it's a really good picture of showing you what the river does. It shows you the different outlets in our, here's the Foss Waterway, And I'd like to point out the hylobos. The hylobos comes from a river up in Federal Way or a stream. But this is important. It plays into a project that I'm going to highlight at the end. But the other thing why I liked this is 2 weeks ago you had Sue Rozier from Puget Sound Keepers come and talk about Clean Water Act and local governments and other parties and their violations. She spoke specifically about point pollution. You can see very clearly non-point pollution. Even though these aren't toxics, the sediment is also regulated under the Clean Water Act. And so this would be another challenge that local jurisdictions would have if the federal government were, or they do, set sediment levels. If you can imagine, there's no way you could control the sediment coming off Mount Rainier, so you have to incorporate that into your base and then figure out how to deal with it. So when you hear things such as local governments suing DOE, as recently happened on the stormwater permit, these are the sort of issues. It's whether the level of protection has taken these sort of differences in the locales into consideration. But I thought that was a pretty telling picture. So the challenges that we have working together, as I indicated, with those 23 cities and towns, and in Pierce County, we have areas that are, if you were to drive through them, you would think they were a city and town. They're just as urban as a city or town would be. You know, in the old days, it was thought that counties would only provide the rural services, just, you know, police and sheriff and the courts, that sort of thing. But they've taken on a new role dealing with social services, health issues, land use. So how do you get people to work together? If you can imagine, this is truly a site along the Puyallup River. The river's over here. And you can see during the flood event what happened. But if you can also imagine, just by constructing or building, Ording is the town in these pictures, but if Ording doesn't have minimum standards or standards that are equal to people around, they can allow things like this. And you know, obviously, this is displacing water, and it's got to go somewhere. So those are some of the challenges. This is a Pierce County picture where we have extremely tight land use regulations, but nature's winning anyway. So how we try to address this is, what I want you to recognize is that regulations can't do it. You know, people always say regulate, regulate, regulate. It just won't cut it in some of these circumstances. And so we have what we call a comprehensive stormwater plan. And it takes different elements of protection and tries to lump them together. And this is where you get the multiples working together. One of the first things that it has is a public education process. We have letters that we send out to people who are in these flood-prone areas. As you can imagine, the mailing list was pretty little when it was just that green area that we're getting the mailing. And now that there's the blue, we have considerably more people on our mailing list. We have a flood warning system. Last year, in fact, there's one little detail. The White River is controlled by Mud Mountain Dam. That was one of the answers to dealing with the flows. As the White River comes into the Puyallup, the Corps of Engineers has the ability to, like, turn on the faucet, turn off the faucet. But they have how much capacity they can hold behind the dam and how much they can let out. So it's a delicate balancing act. But last year, when we were getting the potential of flooding in the lower Puyallup and the Corps was dealing with this faucet on and off, it looked as if there was a section in our county that was going to get flooded. It was going to get overtopped, the levee. And so this flood warning system is actually a reverse 911. We can go into our geographic information system and we can pinpoint different areas, set them up, and they get phone calls to warn them. The good news is it was 3/4 of an inch from the top of the levee. It didn't top. The bad news is you can't believe how many people complained that we called them and it didn't flood. So we also have in our regulations now, instead of, we're trying to use more of the natural things. And this is a concept called channel migration zone. And what Pierce did was had our channel migration zone mapped. And basically what it was to go back using geologists, hydrologists, and figure out where would the river have normally gone through history and what would have happened if we had not tried to interfere with it. So this is a section just for illustrative purposes, you can see too, there's a lighter color and then the more pink color. We chose to regulate to this pinker color, which was more severe and more likely to happen. But this is above the minimum of FEMA. But what we've told people is that they cannot build in the channel migration zone. As you can imagine, we have the complex issue of explaining to people with their property rights who thought, you know, I always wanted to build my house there over, you know, overlooking the river. Well, we needed the challenge of working with them, which we did in public meetings, and convincing them that that was an appropriate thing to do. A couple things happen. It's always good to get a flood to reiterate what's happening. But this truly is, you know, there was a levee out here. This is a natural migration zone, a natural channel that happened as a result of it. Keep this little picture in mind. I'm going to point out something on a future slide here. One of the other things, in addition to regulations, education, and our flood warning system, we also have capital projects. This would be a large community project, but if you were just to think, if Montlake, for instance, needed to have a storm water area, which I know they do need, you could potentially just use this. Those are funded frequently from real estate excise tax and on property bills. If you own a house, most counties have a surface water management fee. I think it's $87 on mine a year, but that's the sort of thing you do. There are also those big regional areas. For instance, if you had a whole community that needed it, this is an example. But what Pierce is trying to do, in addition to just doing these regional things, we're trying to turn them into, this is not a great example, but this one still has a fence on it, but we've tried to make them more natural, like parks, so you could have walking paths, soccer fields, other things, intentionally meaning for them to flood in these times when you need the peak capacity, but wouldn't be that way every day. And this is one of my favorite things, and this truly, nationally, the credit goes to the staff from Pierce County's Public Works Department. Under the Federal Emergency Management Program, when you flood and you have insurance, they come in and they pay you off. Pay you your money and you can rebuild. Or if there are destructions through regions, as you know, the governor declares an emergency, then local governments submit to the federal agencies. And oftentimes, in fact, most times they give you some sort of compensation for the damage. But before, until, I think it was like 1996, if I remember correctly, FEMA was requiring if your house flooded, you had to replace it with a house. You know, if a road got destroyed, it had to be replaced with a road. You know, so like for like. It just didn't make sense. There were places that had been destroyed 2 and 3 times. And so the staff from Public Works met with FEMA. You know, it wasn't an overnight discussion, but got them to allow us to take that money and buy people out. And at first it was pretty interesting because when this concept came up, people said, no way, no way. You're not buying me out, no way. Well, we had 2 major floods, and now the list of people willing to let us buy them out is longer than we have money for. But strategically, the county started buying up property. And these properties become provide the ability for, again, cross purposes. Some of these have been used for projects, which I'm going to highlight here in a minute. But one of my favorites is for Pierce County, we want local farmers to survive. We don't want to just buy their land and have it turn into a blackberry bush. We want them to farm. And so when we did our regulations about 6 years ago, we intentionally put into our regulations under, not exemptions, but an easier process to get permits to actually farm. And now the county is leasing out these lands. If you can imagine, these are prime farmlands, incredibly gorgeous soils. And some of these have been leased out. Would be my dream that eventually anything that was left would be leased out. And then we're dealing with the local farmers, with co-ops, with nonprofits, and trying to get the food to market. And you're going, so what do you have to do with this? Well, these are my favorites. These are the habitat projects. And my job, I have an incredibly wonderful job, and I don't want to tell people about it for fear that someone will come in and try to take it from me. But I get the ability to work with virtually any topic that has an environmental connection, and I've yet to find many that don't. So I get to work with all sorts of things. And this is the concept of, again, using one project to solve multiple purposes. This is the Lower Puyallup again. These little things that you see are remnants of the old river system. This is Wapato Creek, so it's not part of the Puyallup, but this is truly part of the Puyallup. These oxbows we're trying to reconnect. It provides rearing habitat for salmon. It also changes the hydraulics of the river, and when it absorbs the water, it changes the amount of water, so the hydrology. So you have both connections there. These are projects. This is actually one. Again, this is a project done for multiple purposes. When this started, it was just a wetland mitigation banking site back here, and it was used only for Pierce County roads. Check the time here, thanks. But we had the opportunity to connect it actually to the river, reconnect the oxbow, and now it has phenomenal juvenile rearing. And it takes one good high water to get these projects going. For the most part, it doesn't even take man doing anything with a bulldozer. It just happens. So there's one. We now have three of these in Parrish County. We've got this one. We've got one across the river from it up a bit. And the Puyallup tribe is just finishing a really large one in Fife called the Frank Albert Road Project. And that's how we can do it. We combine state and salmon funding money. We combine county money. We combine tribe in-kind resources, private engineering firms. And the setback levies, I think these are the sort of projects that got me invited here, if I remember correctly. But Pierce has taken on this concept of setting levies back as far as they can. And as you can probably see, that's the line of the old levee. So what happens is you go back as far as you can. In this case, the infrastructure that had to be protected was this road. So this opened up this much more area for the river to decide where it was going to go. Again, changing the velocity and the amount of water that gets to the lower river. I'm losing my microphone, sorry here. Oh, I also wanted to point out this little spot right here. Remember that house? That's where that house sat. I have another picture of it. That house used to sit right there. So obviously they were willing sellers, and we were able to do that and do the setback levy. This is this picture shows an aerial of that same project. So very clearly you can see where the levees used to be and what happened. And one of the most recent and most challenging projects that I got a chance to work on, we call the Soldiers Home Setback Levee. And that's because back here is a facility for a veterans home, and that's where it gets its name. But this was really complex. When we first thought that this would be a good spot to do a project, we thought there would be Corps of Engineers money available, because for years the Corps had monies available. But then we got a few hiccups like Katrina and the flooding of the Mississippi, and all of a sudden there was no more federal funding coming through. So it was kind of like, so what do we do now? Here's where it's actually located. If any of you have gone up through Orting, the little town of Orting. This is Orting, and here's this. If any of you are motorcycle riders, I would highly recommend this road. You can go that way and go up to Eatonville and up to Mount Rainier. But this is the project. It restores habitat. It addresses flood control. It has one of the most interesting things in that it satisfies the obligation, again going back to your conversation from 2 weeks ago under the Clean Water Act. There are those who are potential responsible parties, people who have been charged with polluting or some toxins on their site, and they have to have a way of mitigating it. On the Hylabos, that one waterway that I showed you on the far left, there were 20 parties that couldn't find mitigation sites in their area to mitigate for, and so worked with the attorneys for them, and they decided that they would love to give us the money to help build this project if indeed we can convince the tribes, the federal government, the Clean Water Act people, and literally the Department of Justice, that their mitigation was equal and that they could go forward. And so we went through that process. It took almost 6 years from start to finish to get the monies, the project, the federal approval. But now what we have is we have almost a mile long new setback levee, which is this. You can see the river used to go this way. This provides 900 more feet from where the existing levee was, and it's 67 acres of riparian habitat. This off-site mitigation concept is one that I think you'll probably hear more and more about. People frequently, such as if any of you work with wetlands, you do wetland mitigation, you know, you try to do an on-site or close to, but you end up with all these little pockets of things. Sometimes they're successful ecologically, sometimes they're not. There's a lot of effort now being put into looking at things off-site mitigation and that have a more regional impact. And obviously the challenge is to prove that indeed you're mitigating for your impacts, but it's pretty impressive when it happens. The funding for this project, as I mentioned, came from multiple sources. This is the project from the a little farther upstream. We got $1.6 million from the federal government to start with. And that started early on when the salmon were listed and the federal government were giving different people at the table monies to help with it. 800,000 of that came to Pierce County and 800,000 of it came to the Port of Tacoma. Again, this was the ability to talk with the port, and it didn't take much convincing on our part to have them give the money to us. They realized the benefit of having a regional and a large project done up here. So that's how it happened. And then, as I'd indicated, we thought we'd get some of the construction money from the Corps, but that wasn't available. So we ended up getting, it cost $3.9 million in addition to the $1.6 million to construct this. And 2.1 of that came from those 20 potentially responsible parties called PRPs. So that was fairly significant. That was also fairly new. It's a new concept and one that I'm sure others will try now, but it hadn't been tried before. We got some money from the state, from the Salmon Funding Recovery Board, and then the rest was the county's real estate, state excise tax and stormwater. But what we've got is now we have a levee that's certified to that 1%, that 100-year flood level. Before, it was only a 25-year flood level. And it got improvements. This is, again, the same thing. Improvements, you don't just do the one side of the river. You reinforce the other, obviously, because recognizing what the water is going to do. The town of Ording, who frequently doesn't have great things to say about the county, actually had an article in the newspaper saying that this project had saved them during the last flood, and it was specifically because of the reinforcement of this side of the levee. So that's how you doing the projects holistically. Then building on that project, because, again, we'd had these properties that we'd already purchased, had the momentum and project going, this we call the Ford setback levee, and it's connected to that Soldiers' Home setback levee. So again, the same process where you take existing levees, the Puyallup River, the floodplain area, and you move it back. So now we've added another considerable distance onto that Soldiers' Home levee. To begin, you don't have to do much. This, again, is the Ford levee. We thought maybe we were going to have to go in and use a backhoe to get the river to start this way. In fact, I volunteered You could see the look of terror in people's eyes when I suggested that. But indeed, again, we didn't have to. Mother Nature just took over, and the first good flood conditions, and it was going. So this is it. This is one of the pictures that I use to when I get frustrated, and I think, is it worth all this conversation, working in all these groups, having to listen, having to find the experts, because I'm definitely not it. This is the result. So with that, I'd love to take questions.
Any questions?
I've left you speechless. Thanks.
Back in with what you're talking about with pollution control from silt in the river, mm-hmm. It's a little fuzzy on how you guys actually deal with that. You don't actually dredge silt out of the river, like, get down to level it's acceptable,
or
that would be pretty practical.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, the question was, when I had the picture up of the silt, what do we do with the silt? Do we dredge it? For years, it was dredged. As you can see in that 1914 picture, it was dredged. And there is a market for it. It's worth a lot of money. But because that first section, 8-9 miles of the Puyallup River, is levied, there's not much habitat. And we have got two Chinook species in that river. One of them specifically is a spring run that goes up the White. And so that's really sensitive area. That's why we're trying to reconnect the oxbows, so at least the salmon will have, you know, their rearing area so they can spend that year before they go out. So we have not done dredging for years. Right now, with this comprehensive look of how to deal with it, it is on the table. We have a group I represent, Pierce County, on it for the executive, with tribes, industry, other jurisdictions, federal agencies, state agencies, to figure out how we are going to deal with this, you know, that extra flow of water. And dredging is on the table. The problem with dredging, though, is, so how often do you do it? It's really expensive. How do you keep doing it? The permitting process right now is really challenging. The gentleman from the Puyallup tribe estimated the other day that it would probably take us 8 to 10 years to get the first dredging going, so what do you do? So what we're trying to do is to concentrate on other projects in the interim. Dredging may end up being one of the things, but if it happens on bending, it will just be in spots. But the actual elevation of the river that's, you know, just in this century is about 2.5 feet. The bottom is up. So you can imagine what it does to your levee systems. You have no freeboard if the river is up. So it's really challenging. If you have an answer, I left my cards out there. You can give me a call or send me an email.
It's kind of a follow-up to that. Mm-hmm. I was just curious if you had observed that more sediment is actually available to the river by widening the sort of floodplain area. Do you get more sediment at the mouth of the river?
Interesting. As the engineers explain it to me, when the river has the chance to slow down, it deposits more up higher. And so you don't necessarily. Their thought was when they constructed the levee system, it would be like a fire hose. And what they really thought was that it would just shoot all that sediment out. In reality, that's not what happened. So any bend in the river, you get a silt bench. And so, no. But we'll have to calculate that to see exactly what happened.
It sounds like the county's done a really good job of purchasing properties along the river. Now with the new transfer of development rights agreement, is there going to be any move towards using that along the river, or is that more for agricultural?
The question was, Pierce County has a great new transfer of development right. We got authority to do it, locally adopted. That could be used for this. We didn't limit it just to farms. We put an administrative process in place that would allow it. The challenge of that is right now that's one of the positions that's not being funded, someone to actually administer that program. And for those of you who are familiar with transfer of development rights, or excuse me, you're not familiar with them, somebody, if they have a 10-acre parcel that they could put 10 houses on, you buy for them the value of the nine houses, they leave their one, and then that property can never be developed. And then somebody can use those nine density units to do things. So the challenge, though, isn't finding someone willing to sell it. It's finding a neighborhood that's willing to allow nine more units into their neighborhood. So the receiving sites and transfer of development rights are really challenging. Again, if someone wants a thesis project, that would be a really good one. There is a... Okay.
How are you dealing with planting the new setbacks?
Thank you. The question was, how are we dealing with planting the new setbacks, levies? If you've read within the last couple months in the newspaper, planting on Corps of Engineers-approved levies is not allowed. Having said that, Pierce County is lucky in that, some would say we aren't lucky, I would say we're lucky. Because we have that land use settlement with the Puyallup tribe, we have a vegetation maintenance agreement where we allow more vegetation on our levees, and that is a blessed agreement by Congress. And so it's one federal agency against the other. So we do have more vegetation on our levees. In these particular cases, it's more a natural area anyway. So this particular levee, for instance, you can see it's driven across, so there aren't plantings. But we do plantings. And that very first one I showed you, we did a substantial amount of planting in the area between the old setback and the new setback. And if you were to go out now, you would just think it was, you know, it's about a 10, 15-year-old forest. But it is interesting. Those are challenges that governments have, is you have one federal mandate playing off against another federal mandate.
Why would they not allow it?
Why would FEMA the Corps of Engineers not allow it? Because they're afraid of the root structures affecting the structural integrity of these systems, and because the federal FEMA agency has to pay the flood insurance. That's the purpose. Debbie?
As a liberal arts major, how steep was your learning curve when you got into the environmental work?
I have been blessed. I come from a family where a father who my kids would say knew everything on the Discovery Channel. He always wanted to learn more and more and more. So it was a very steep one. It's still a steep on certain things, but... I use the old adage, I know my kids are sick of hearing this, is you have two ears and one mouth, use them proportionally. So I find if you sit in a room with very bright people, you can learn quite a bit. So that's what I've done.
Is this some kind of a monitoring project that you have looking at these things to see how successful they are?
We do, and again, it's not just on the county. We are blessed by having three native tribes in our area, the Muckleshoots, the Puyallups, and the Nisqually. The Puyallups are actually doing the monitoring on this for salmonid issues. And then we have staff related to our Clean Water Act, National Pollution Discharge Elimination System, MPDES permit, who do water quality monitoring. So again, it's combining. We would never have enough resources to do everything, but taking a bit from here and a bit from here.
About the zoning.
Uh-huh.
There's an article in the paper about farmers having to move because they rezone Irving for development rather than the dairy farms because it smelled bad and
yeah.
It's
dead
and released. So how are you encouraging farming when there are people in the market?
Well, the question was, how are we encouraging farming when the example was given, there was a farmer highlighted who had to move his dairy farm because Ording was allowing residences and people were complaining about the smell. Again, that really highlights every jurisdiction has its own ability to put regulations in place. Ording's are substantially different than Pierce, but Ording is just a little, you know, surrounded by the county. In the county, how we've done it is we've gone through and we've, using our comprehensive land use plan, designated agricultural resource lands. These are true farm lands or true mining lands that have resources that just won't happen anywhere else. And that's the base of the zoning. It is virtually impossible to change out of that zone because the soil isn't going to change, and that's one of the main criteria. So that zoning is in place. We also adopted in the last several years what's called a right to farm bill, and it specifically addresses exactly that. You neighbors who are moving in recognize there will be machinery, there will be smells, this is happening, and we've tried to make sure that the farmers feel comfortable. Pierce doesn't, I think our last dairy farm, Wilcox Farms, has actually moved its cattle over to Eastern Washington, but that wasn't a regulatory issue, that was a transportation issue of how much it was costing them to bring their feed across the mountain. But they still have their egg processing. They are a great example of, you know, taking an industry that historically is thought of in a negative light with the environment. And if you, you know, go to Costco and you look at their eggs or their milk, they're salmon safe. They have incredible habitat projects on their farm. They do everything sustainably. So we've tried to encourage that and help people along. But it has taken regulations, and again, it's conflict between one jurisdiction's regulations and another.
Denny? You started your lecture with some ideas and recommendations, might we say principles. I'm wondering if you could re-lead those into now you're closer to the lecture, into what you talked about. Do you mind just what those are?
I will. You don't have to know exactly what you want to do. I think art history degree has been the brunt of late night TV for so long, but I'm here to attest. You get a good basic education. First of all, it gets you an interview if you've got a degree. In my case, I know my master's also got me an interview, even though it was art history and business. So that's helpful. I didn't know what I was going to do. When I left here, I thought I was... I graduated and I went to work in a ski area, and I thought I was coming back to do colonial American art. I thought I'd have an antique store where I would restore, you know, if you had a rocking chair or something, you wouldn't use bolts, you'd build it in the way it was. It didn't happen. I fell in love with my husband and I fell in love with skiing and ended up taking a whole other thing for 8 years, running Alpental Ski Area, the business side of it. So also, you personally don't have to know everything. As I say, you know, just sit in a room with people who are smart, listen. It's okay if you don't know everything. That's one concept that it took me a whole long time to realize, is that I don't have to know everything. And I know, I've heard this from my kids and all their friends, is how much you hate it when you get stuck in a project with someone who doesn't pull their load or doesn't turn something in and your grade depends on it and everything else. That's the real world. That's what happens every single day. And then, of course, you need to know how to listen. And then, as long as you're going to put effort in it, I'm basically a lazy person. So if I can kill two or three or four birds with one stone, that's what I want to do. Thank you very, very much. And I will be here if you want, have other questions.